Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to
down of two really random stuff with Miss Starkholm, brought to you by a team of voices. Team of Voices is a group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. And I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for keeping the site up and running, and for Deborah Lee for giving the group and the blog talk page so we can share live. All Poetry is free to join. You can log in and knock on our door, a team of voices, and join the fun, submit poetry, call in, and have a general good time. I am your host, Guy Darko. And tonight, as the title promises, we have some really random stuff. And before I get into that, I would like to tell you a little bit about our opening music. It is Foo Fighters, the song Everlong. And this song is often interpreted to be about addictions and bad habits of the late Kurt Cobain, who was in Nirvana with Foo Fighter frontman Dave Grohl. Who wrote the song. However, according to an interview, he penned the song during one of the lowest points in his life ever, Christmas 1996. The frontman was sleeping in a sleeping bag on his, having just gotten divorced from photographer Jennifer Youngblood, and as a consequence was homeless. On top of that, he had no access to his bank account, and both his drummer William Goldsmith and guitarist Pat Smear were on the verge of quitting the Foo Fighters in the midst of all this. He wrote this song in about 45 minutes. Dave Grohl wrote this song about Veruca Salt frontwoman Louise Post, whom he was dating after separating from his first wife. He said Everlong is about being connected to someone so much that not only do you love them physically and spiritually, but when you sing along with them, you harmonize perfectly. A little bit about the song. I hope you enjoyed it. A little bit of a throwback. And before I get into our prompts, I want to let someone who's knocking on my door. Hello, Stephen.
Someone knocking at the door, someone ringing a bell. Hello.
I love when you sing. Oh, my gosh.
Sorry,
Carlton
they're getting
had the buddy
up there late. What's
what?
That? I was just saying that I'm sorry you got Carlton up late.
Well, I know, but he has a buddy. Look at him. He has a friend.
Yeah, that was when he was on Dancing with the Stars.
I think I saw a piece of that. Look at him dance. He's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Carlton. So how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Was off today. Never really got the blood moving, so I'm been very lazy.
Sometimes you got to have those days.
Yeah.
So how long do I have you tonight?
Oh, I don't know, 15, 20, half hour, 2 a.m.
Okay. Well, let me bring on someone else. Hello, sweet. How are you?
Hi, sweetie.
I'm good. How are you?
Hi.
It's not like you're in trouble.
No. Am I B?
No. No. You guys have to excuse me if my voice cracks. I don't know what I did, but I'm still losing it a little bit. It started going a little last night, and so if my voice just randomly sounds really high, if it's waxing and waning, I apologize.
It's called puberty, Sky.
You know, thanks for letting me know about that. Guys are a bunch of punks. All right, so what did you think about the prom?
interesting stuff. I didn't have as much time as I wanted to watch all of them, so I kind of picked on the one that spoke most to me. So.
Okay. Which one did you write about?
The Eye of Sahara.
The Eye of Sahara. Why did it speak to you the most?
Well, being someone who appreciates certain things in nature and how the human race is, not treating it very well. I kind of went from that angle.
That's cool. Okay, well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Eye of Sahara. Our Earth is full of wonder, and the racket structure is one of the most intriguing among them all. As per reports and images presented by NASA, the structure appears like a prominent blue eye on the Sahara Desert when viewed from outer space. Hence, it is also known as the Eye of Sahara. The structure is basically a highly eroded land from encompassing an area of 40 kilometers in diameter. The sedimentary rocks of this structure is the oldest at the center, belonging to the late Proterozoic era. I can speak, I swear. 541 million years ago, while the rocks at the edges belong to about 443.8 million years ago. On land, the structure can be accessed from the small desert town and just west of central Mauritania in western North Africa. And I don't know if I said that right, but we're gonna go with that. But I thought it was pretty cool. It's really weird how it does look like an eye. People were probably walking across it for a long time before we got out to space and see it. For a long time, they used it as a little bit of a landmark in outer space, so it's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited to see where you go with it, and I'm going to have you read it right away.
All right. I see my poem there, and I call this The Day the Earth Opened Her Eye. For millions of years, I've stared out into the vacuum of space, from the dawn of reptilian giants to the rule of the human race. Watched for threats that came from without, not once looking within. In that fateful year mirrored in Haley's tale, I saw how the people had sinned. Pinches of skyscrapers nettled me none, nor the damming of waterway veins, but the raw ruination of so many pets, no grand buffalo roaming the plains. Pinpricks of drilling for fossil fuels did make me wince a bit. However, deforestation does dot our fault lines. Inside, I am throwing a fit. Baletic sharks have been here since I can remember. Now most have disappeared. Plastic bottles in the oceans that make seas decay. A wrong turn this race has steered. So little rain here, sand scrapes at my sight, but farcical for eye to weep. These bipeds will bullishly seal distinct doom, and then we can finally sleep. End poem.
Oh, this is excellent. I love how you went with it. The eye, again, when I put up these prompts, it doesn't really much matter to me if people go fiction, reality, mix them two, as long as they bring in inside the prompts or are inspired with it in any sort of way. So I really love to see creativity and where things inspire. And the way you went with this is phenomenal. You brought in so many things. Like this is the eye watching over everybody, and it's quite disappointed. And I have to agree. You know, the drilling for fossil fuels, the deforestation forest. And bringing in, of course, the sharks, which we were just talking about, all these things that that are happening around the world that people need to talk about, that people need to be aware of, that it needs to be on people's minds. And I just think not only was it was wonderfully written, I think throughout, it is wonderfully, it flows well, and it's wonderfully descriptive. But it sounds quite heartbreaking, and the fact that it's very true. When you ignore the damming of the waterway veins, the raw ruination of so many pets, the grand buffalo roaming the plains, all those things that are now gone, all those animals that are now extinct, and people have this in the idea about bringing them back through cloning and things like that. I see all these things, and it's like, why don't we start, you know, focusing on what we can do to stop, you know, tearing the earth apart. I think my favorite, I don't know if I have a favorite, but I really like it all. But the ending, the sadness that you bring in, the way that you bring in the eye and the rain and weeping, I thought was very clever and also very moving in a way where you look at that eye and it's, you know, ever watching. And hopefully people that read this poem will think about how many water bottles they're getting, how many this, how many that, how much their carbon footprint is really costing the world. Really well done, Stephen.
Thank you, Sky.
Thank you. And my sweet, what do you think?
Well, first, I think your poet's pen, you know, tells the story of the past and now in the future, and it does it so eloquently and beautifully. I hope that people can remember what our duty was and what we're doing now, and maybe there's time to fix it so we can have that duty again. Otherwise, our future is bleak, and it's without hope, and we are going to seal our doom. I think this is one of my favorites. I have so many of my favorites of yours, but as far as looking at what the earth can be, I think if we stand on your pedestal and shout at the world, this is one of my favorites of those. This is fantastic. I really think it's like one of those stand on your soapbox and yell at the world in such a poetic way that people might be lectured and they don't even know that they were.
Thank you, Sweet.
Thank you, Sweet. Excellent comment. And thank you, Stephen. Do you want to tell me anything that's going on over there? Tell me it all. Tell me all the information.
What's going on over there? Let's see. Next show at A Poetic Slice of Life is tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern. And there's the Poetic Inklings of Tomorrow, and it's the one-word prompt. And I'm going to butcher the word once again. Rudineja, something like that. Anyway, the meaning of the word is the way the nature and or the weather begins to feel like autumn. Thursday night is another Inklings, because this one's been canceled a couple times due to emergencies and technical difficulties, so we're hopefully going to try to get the E.E. Cummings quotes finally done, and that's 10 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. And on Friday is also a reschedule at 8 p.m. It's something different. It's open brevity, 80 words or less.
I think I got something for that. And if I may, on Saturday, guess what, Sweet Pea?
What?
Disney Storyboards with a twist, 8 p.m. Disney Selfies. You've got one. You've got Allison Hatter. A selfie.
Oh, Allison Hatter. Okay.
Yep. Well, I'm excited. I love those storyboards. Disney with a twist showed, so... join me, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Hello, life. All right, thank you. Well, you're welcome to hang out as long as you may. Sweet Pea, do you have a poem?
I have one about colors, even though it's not quite to your spot.
Okay.
It's about black and white.
Are there lots of interchanging colors? There are lots and lots of colors? All right. Just say yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Put it down. Let me talk about color. So did you watch the video?
I watched some of it. It was kind of cool.
So you didn't watch that one, Stephen, yet, right?
No, I haven't. I really need to.
I watched it because I like the way, Stephen, you would like it because about how you see colors and stuff when you close your eyes and you calm down. It kind of is in that trance of that world because I can do the same thing. I can close my eyes and see colors, and it talks about how your eyes can be fooled and seeing different colors and like how it will have a different shade, but our eyes are trained to see certain colors at a certain way. It's very interesting. I really enjoyed that video, but I didn't quite get time to write the poem to it because obviously I'm a little.
It's okay. The prompts you could take so widely. If it's on topic, you could definitely bring a free write. That's fine. But the chromatic adaption is really cool. And if I delete the topic and you don't get to see it, Stephen, I'm going to put it in the staff room because it's pretty cool how the mind works and how it links different things in our body. So chromatic adaption is the human visual system's ability to adjust the changes in illumination in order to preserve the appearance of objects of color. It is responsible for our stable appearance of object colors despite the wide variation of light, which might be reflected from objects and observed with your eyes. And what that means is basically when the sun is setting or when the sun is rising, or if it's rainy or if it's sunny or cloudy, or if there's only a little bit of light, your eyes are able to adjust to the color and to see the color despite how other colors or other light are affecting it. So there's one thing that our eyes can do. But then also in this one, it was a bit of an optical illusion that our mind will automatically put color where it's supposed to be if there are quick changes or if it's trying to compensate. So in the video, you're seeing a black and white picture and changes to this array of just a massive mess of colors, not like to the picture, just like the massive just massive just colors. And then you have to stare at that for like 40 seconds or something, and then stare at a dot in the middle of it. And then all of a sudden, when that mass of colors go away and the black and white picture is put back, your mind for a couple seconds sees that picture in color. It sees all the right colors in all the right spots. Guys, blue, it sees all the colors because your mind is being tricked, and it's so quick. It's quicker than you can even respond, and it's putting those colors in and filling them in to memory rather than you're actually seeing it, because obviously it's a black and white picture. It's really cool. I've seen a larger thing on this on my godsons like to watch this thing they had on Netflix. It was like about magic shows and magic tricks, but it's also about the mind and how the mind works. Like some magic shows, like they do stuff by introducing other objects onto the stage where you're paying attention to that rather than really what's going on. And I forget what it was called, but it was a larger episode on this. I remember watching it with kids, and it was pretty cool. So when I saw this video in a shorter length, in about 6 minutes, I was like, oh, I got to do that one because it's really cool. But as I said, you didn't have to get into the technicality of the process, that you could just write me a poem about colors. So I'm excited to see where you went this week, what you brought me. And if anybody wants to talk about what I just said, jump in, please. What do you think about that? Anybody want
to? I'd like to say something because now it kind of answers a question that I've always wondered as to why I see some very weird stuff sometimes when I close my eyes.
I don't know if you could blame it on that.
Well, no, I mean, because I close my eyes and I see colors still, and sometimes, well, I mean, right away, it's almost like it's still a picture of what I was looking at inside my eyelids, but then it does contort into some pretty dark crap usually that I write down in my drafts.
What were you going to say, Sweet Pea?
No, I'm like Stephen, where I can close my eyes and still see remnants of color, whether it's red or green or blue. And sometimes if I really want to calm down, I will pull up colors like blue or purples, or and I can really, it literally behind my eyelids, just see those swirls of
red
color.
Yeah, the red dots that I call up.
Yeah.
Those red dots are really annoying. Those red dots are a real thing. When you close your eyes and you see the red dot, go ahead.
But I can change my dots' colors. I can make them whatever color I want. And that kind it's really interesting that they talk about how your mind can just kind of filter in those colors. And I found that whole thing kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. Oh, right, go ahead. The red dots, what?
Well, I was just saying that the red dots for me, at least as a child, always helped chase away the dark images that I would see inside my eyelids. So they were always very helpful to me.
I don't know how true it is, but I was told once when I do the red dots, do you ever it goes to a big green dot and then breaks apart? I don't, it must be a thing. I'm gonna figure out. I'm gonna go look this up after we leave about these dots. But
I've tried. I can't find nothing.
What did you say, Stephen?
I said I've tried. I can't find anything on it.
Oh, I'm sure there's got to be something. There's got to be something. Did you ever think about the fact that when you have dreams, do you dream in color?
I usually do.
I wrote a whole poem about. I wrote a poem
bring that one too. Bring that one too, because it fits us. So
that's in a book. That's in
a
book. I have never even transferred that.
Well, see, the thing is that color is made from, light. Obviously, when you're sleeping, you're not really dreaming in color. Your memory. You're using your memory. It's not true color. It's your memory.
Yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah. So I guess it's depending on how you take it. Since it's just us, even if you have a second one related to any of the three things about colors, you're welcome. And Sweet Pea, you are up.
Yeah. Okay. So this is Melty Crayon. Purple, the color between red and green. Indigo shades, green and dark blue and purple too. In mauve, all chant to royalty. But upon her ebony hair, you'll find no crown. Peacock feathers, roses in pink and plum colors. Pitch black tails and bloody red trails. Pea green vomit, royal blue seas. A master poet of imagery. Orange and russet, cinnamon, blueberry, sugar, berries and silver stars, pomegranates of ruby, peaches, sweet, all written to taste in diesel colors. Turquoise wings of butterflies cried on tangerine sunsets and sangria skies. Moss-covered fields pop with salmon tinted springs. Pictures are words, there are words, pictures instead. Melted crayons on the page tell a story to all who dare meet her sensual heat. Prepare for a giggle or a smack in the face, or the burn in the wax and the melting crayon makes.
This is cool. I have to be honest with you. I don't know about the pea green vomit, okay? but besides that, it is very clever. It's very gross. but this is great. This was wonderful colors. And we were just talking about the red and green dots in our eyes, and then you come and you say between the red and blue indigo shades, gleam in dark blue and purple too, and sometimes black can be so dark it almost looks like a dark blue or dark like a dark bluish purple. So I think it's pretty cool how you kind of brought in that conversation with the red and blue dots as well. I love the word mauve. I just love it. I just I don't know what it is, but I love that word. I loved, there were so many colors, the peacock feathers, pitch black tail, the bloody red trails. I love that inner line rhyme there. And they're not too much of a rhymer, so I like when you kind of, you probably just, you're just writing and then all of a sudden it just comes in. It's probably not even attempted. It just kind of happens, I would imagine. But I like to see it every so often. I'm like, oh, that's pretty clever. Of course, the blueberry sugar fairies, there was a little bit of magic, and the silver stars and the pomegranate and ruby peaches sweet. You brought in so many visuals and taste, all written to taste. So I like how you bring in the taste as well. I'm going to stop stealing all the lines just in case Stephen wants one. But I thought it was very, very, very wonderfully done, beautifully descriptive, and do like melting crayons. Do you guys ever recall the melting crayon machine? Like you put all your little bits of crayons in it and it's supposed to make other crayons, like you melt and you make new crayons?
No.
No? I've never tried it myself, but I got it as a gift. So, and it is very clever. So instead of throwing all those little bits away, you just make these crayons. But beautifully done, sweet. What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah, I like this. I read your author's notes, too, so I definitely think you did a great job. I think it's a beautiful use of color and a wonderful tribute to Deb, who is the queen of crayons. The part that Sky mentioned, the pea green vomit, I like that because it made me think of Harrison Ford's line in the movie American Graffiti when he described a car color as a cross between puke green and piss yellow. Yeah, I really like this one a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
That's awesome.
All right. Now we're out of free for all. So, Stephen, do you have a second one?
I actually have one that I wrote about the red dots that I could bring if you like.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's good. Because it's all, that's all about the mind and how the mind and illusions and, you know, it's all relative. So I like that. I'm interested now. And Sweet Pea, load up your other one that you have about the other thing that we were talking about. Load them up. I'm putting you guys to work. Do you see that? You come to my show.
No, but I never put that in the computer. That's in a book a long time ago. So I can find something else.
Okay, yeah. Going to have to find something else then. I'm so demanding. All right, hold on. Let me press the button. All right, I am ready.
All right. Well, I call this childhood defense mechanism. Tiny glowing crimson spheres came and took away my fears way back when I was just a child with imagination that ran wild. When something scary came in my room and tried to fill me full of gloom, I'd call up millions of ruby balls that made all frightening images fall. Little red dots from inside my head would take away visions that I did dread. They'd come and do their job with care, then disappear into thin air. End poem.
Oh, I love this one. You know, this is something, I mean, it's obviously quite brilliant and quite, of course, saddening because, you know, you think about all the things that, you know, what we're afraid of as a child, whether it be those monsters under our bed or real monsters that we know or past monsters that we have known that continue to haunt us. There's so many ways that this can be interpreted and being taken. And of course, the reader can implement their own fears and their own ideas of what this fear might be. But when you are a kid, you do have a brilliant imagination, and sometimes it could be to their detriment, and sometimes it could be to their salvation. And you know, given the idea of meditation, you know, a lot of people, when they're upset or when they're angry, you know, kind of along the lines what Sweet Pea was saying, that when she wants to calm down, she thinks of, she closes her eyes and speaks colors. So she's focusing on something. She's putting her mind to work something in a way of meditating. In whatever way people, and you were probably very young, so it's not like I'm going to sit here and meditate. But really, that's what you were doing. You're focusing on one thing, and you're allowing it to focus your attention on something else besides that darkness that was inducing fear. And it's amazing how before we're even told to do such things or that things that might help us, that as kids, sometimes we learn how to cope ourselves. And I thought this was quite brilliant. Brilliantly done.
Thank you, Sky.
Thank you. And we?
I love this poem. As I stated many times before, I think it's a dark place that you had to go, but a place where you can find peace. And, you know, just having that ability to bring it, it's like a magical ability, a place to go, a place to find peace. And I love the way you describe it, how it comes to you and how it does all that. I think the way you write your poems and the way you bring it is an amazing thing to do, and I'm glad that you had it and that you can still do it. That's what I think is really cool, is that you still have that ability to do it.
Yeah. Thanks, sweet. Yeah, I can still call them up. I try it every now and then.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Hey, you know what, Sweet Pea, before you read, I didn't ask you, do you want to talk about your next show?
My next show is a letter. If your future self had to write a letter about your life right here and now, what would it say? So that's kind of interesting. If you have to look at your moments in life as you are here today, what do you think your future self would say to you? And then the following week is I'm pretty excited about, because they just released, the Metropolitan Arts just released the drawings of Salvador Dali's Alice in Wonderland series. He did a series of impressions of Alice in Wonderland, and they're very rarely seen, very rarely brought out. So I'm pretty excited about that show. So go look at them and write what you see. Maybe you'll see something about Alice in Wonderland. Maybe you won't, but go ahead and look.
Awesome. Sounds fun.
Yeah.
That's interesting take. I usually hear those things. What would your letter to your past self be? But to go even further into the future, to write a letter to you now, I don't know if I've heard of that one. That's pretty cool.
So I'm going to do another color one for you.
Color, who's that the color?
Yeah, this one's going to, I just wrote that long ago, so. And this is Blackbirds. Bluebird songs and red cardinal melodies went silent. Gray pigeons, yellow warbles, and mighty sparrows covered in ash. Tears of the eagle rang, onyx and silver towers crashed. White doves and angels on one September morning. All the wings in the sky turned black and home.
Love it. I love warbles. I just wrote a poem about yellow warbles. I'm so excited. This is beautiful. I love how you start out with the blackbirds, but you bring in so many other colorful things. These bluebird songs and red cardinal melodies went silent. Gray pigeons, yellow warbles, and mighty sparrows covered in ash. You come in quite beautiful, and then all of a sudden we're covered in ash. The tears, the eagle rained. I know I'm reading the whole thing again. I'm processing. This was really great. I think obviously you're speaking about September 11th, I would imagine. And
yes.
You know, when you bring us in with with things like the world has stopped, that's what it reminds me of, because I think everybody who was at an age that could remember this, I think I was in high school, so it was my sophomore year. And the thing about it is that when those reports came on the news, I remember the classroom where I was. I remember the exact spot that I was sitting in. I remember the two people that I was sitting with. And then we remained in that classroom all day. We didn't switch classes, except for lunches, I think. Everybody remained into the classes they were in, and all classes were stopped, and the TVs were put on because we had classroom TVs, and we pretty much watched that news, and that was it. That was what we did for the remainder of the day. But I bet you that if you asked anybody that was old enough to be aware of what was happening, they could tell you the exact spot where they found out or where they were when that news came in, because it was as if the world stopped. And when you speak of that, when you say it here, you do it through nature. But I also understand that because it stopped everything. And I thought this was a beautiful tribute and beautifully done.
Yeah, I watched that second plane hit that building live. It's a moment I'll never forget.
Stephen, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I think this is a sad yet also a wonderful tribute to the falling of the towers, a day that did last forever. It's an excellent brevity. And yeah, Sky, I agree. I remember I had just dropped my son off at school, and I was driving back home because at the time I worked third shift, and I heard it on the radio. And at the time, the way they talked about it on the radio, it sounded like it was just a little... single engine, little tiny plane, and it was like, so, okay, no biggie. But then I got home and I turned the news on and I saw what was really going on. And that's where I stayed the rest of the day, pretty much. But yeah, great job, Sweepy.
Thank you.
All right. Well, do you guys want to talk about if no one writes to them, I like to save them. So that second prompt we're not going to talk about, because if no one comes with it, then I am not going to do. I'm going to save it. Well, no, I'm going to save it for a different time. It's about Deb actually. I'm sorry. Oh my goodness, my voice. Deb, if she comes, she might write to that one. There are some creepy crawlies, but it's about an island. And there's this series of islands, and there was something, a creature that was thought to be extinct, but it was hiding in this little island. So, but I'm gonna save that one though, because
it was the island of Dr. Moreau.
Huh?
Who?
What?
I said, who? You said, because Sweepy said something and I said something, and you said, huh, so I wasn't sure who you were saying it to.
Oh, I'm creepy stuff,
I might have a poem.
Yeah, but
I would have a poem.
But you know what, though? We're the only ones here, so I don't know if Deb wants me to close out earlier, what she wants me to do, but I'm willing to hang out and read your guys' poems and just kind of go a free-for-all from here.
I'm just saying, if you have something that's creepy, explain it to me and Steven, and we might have something to give you.
Yes, but if no one wrote the actual prompt, I want to save it for later. Bring me a poem about the earth or eyes or things that are of the earth. Steven, your job is to find one within 2 seconds, because you're next. Just going to keep you guys here.
Well, I know I'm one about I know I have one about eyes.
Absolutely.
I'm running with it right now.
No, this is it's called Really Random Stuff, okay? So if you guys want to go off topic and bring me a poem of your choice, I'm okay with that at this point. We're about 8:45.
Oh,
the prompts. So this is really random stuff. So if we go completely random, guess what? We're still on topic because we're talking about really random stuff, right?
It's true. This
so
one you read before, Sky. I'm going to read it.
Anything that you've written recently or written before that you're quite proud of, bring me something and read it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to bring a poem for Sweet Pea that's really random, but I wanted her to hear it the other day, and she wasn't around.
I want you to hear this, but you weren't around.
This is getting really random. All right, Stephen, you got one?
Well, I dropped one, but both you and Sweet have heard it before, so I'm not going to read that again.
You heard this one, but Sky didn't, and I want to read it to Sky.
Okay. Go ahead, Sweet.
All right. This is Jack. Jackie's sister is Merlot and cigar moment in the zone in this conversation. A scarlet letter warning for women to keep a proper reputation. I am the story of the final execution and the truth of why no one knew him. Warnings are never heeded by the drunk and the hungry, working the streets for a morsel, a pound, or a penny. Ladies are cried. I would not be the one in a million. He was the vessel and I was the treasure he carried. Belligerent hands you lax to swallow the neck of a swan. His footsteps softened as he followed the path of moonlight shadow. Red brick walkways led to open doors and silent rooms, where he tied my body to a bed covered by a piss yellow linen spread. Fingers Jack brushed my ginger hair across the pillow. Jack sharpened the scalpel, the knives, and instruments of his trade. He lined them up in order of their size. He took pride in his display. Then he sat down and studied drawing, covered in crimson stains. From his black satchel came a long stem red rose. He laid it at my feet and kissed both my quivering cheeks. And in his saffron eyes, flame began to rise. Jack spoke to me and whispered, "Goodbye, my lovely friend." And to my lips, she raised a glass, blackberry wine. I closed my eyes and prayed for God to shield me from the pain. The first slice was quick and dove into my chest, turning pitch yellow linens into a dull colored rust. Before I could scream, another stab took my breath. In a haze of confusion, I heard a strange giggle. In a fog of disillusion, there stood a woman, knife in hand, carving out my middle. Jack stood back and watched this pint-sized psycho play, cutting out my organs to explore, map, and display. She was the madman. He was just her toy. As knives, dolls, and sunbeams smiled, she began to yawn. She whispered in my ear, "I think it's time I learned about men." In the final moments of my life, I knew Jack soon to disappear. And the poem.
This is going to give me nightmares. I had my mother over, and she loves these crime detective shows, and so I already have that in my head. Now I've got to think about Jack the Ripper. This is really good. I really do enjoy reinventions and things like this. I like the perspective that you brought it into. I think that when you put things in first-person perspective, it becomes more personal. You do this in a really interesting way. And then without, I think to the rock on the grid. the first slice with a quick and done into my chest. And then you're using a more, I would say, quote-unquote, crafty word. You're using this yellow, but when you're using words like that, sometimes, well, all the time, well, if done well and done in a piece where it's done for effect, it could make the piece stand out, and it's actually bringing a bit of rawness and a bit of realness and that, like I said earlier, that little bit of grit into the piece that is necessary for pieces of this nature. So I do think that that was a brilliant technique that you used, that throwing that in there. And the like I said, the details going, this was like a horror story about Jack the Ripper, which of course everybody knows, but you're bringing it into your own new way. And bringing in, I think, a intimacy into the piece, a horrific intimacy, but a intimacy nonetheless, which is done very, very well. And I'm going to have nightmares now. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Stephen, what do you think about my nightmares?
Yeah, I like this a lot. I did hear this the other night, and I liked hearing it again. Because the way you tell the story, Sweet Pea, it does send some chills down the spine. And of course, yeah, I definitely went to Jack the Ripper almost immediately. But the twist at the end is what really made me smile, the fact that Jack the Ripper was not the brains in the whole operation, that some woman was actually making him her puppet. And soon she was going to, I think, him as well. I thought this was really cool.
Thank you. Yeah, it's definitely fun to make it a twist where he was just bringing her bodies to dissect. I thought that was fun to just kind of twist that.
Awesome. Thank you. Look at sometimes Sweet Pea and I miss each other on radio shows, and we'll call each other on the phone and we'll say, "You missed me, read this. You got to listen." all right, so we're going to have Stephen go, and then I found one, and it is relative because you brought me yellow warbles, and I wrote a poem with the yellow warbles, so I'm going to read that one
awesome.
To you because I thought you might like it. But why'd you pick this one? Irish whiskey in a plastic 60 cup.
I don't know. You said it's really random, and this is random. Nobody's heard this one before. I've not read this on the air at all. And this is actually the reason why the E.E. Cummings show was canceled the second time because of a close family member that was very ill and did actually pass away. And this is what I wrote about them. And I call this, as Sky said, Irish whiskey in a plastic Dixie cup. An inch of cold black liquid sits still at the bottom of a thin glass carafe. Five casseroles of various fixings, from poultry to Roma-based sauce, sit chilling in the icebox, untouched, save a timed divot in the prepared box dressing. Creak of the rocking chair in the darkness of the den, the only light coming from the flickering fluorescent of the pantry. An occasional sniffle heard from the chair. Tangerine hair and dirty-toed memories, the smiles, the embraces, that presence that would fill a room has gone silent. End poem.
Well, firstly, Stephen, I mean, and, you know, it's when people, when this is a more, it's like a real and it's telling because, you know, when death happens, the world kind of keeps going. And not to make this up, you know, about me, but I do remember I haven't experienced a lot of death or like I said, I've experienced death, but I would say not ever. I've never had experienced death in the way that I did when my aunt died. And I was in a hospital with her, and I remember after looking out the window, and I remember thinking at that time, I will always remember this window and how people are just kind of walking by. and going about their lives. You know, what was she just to them? You know, meanwhile, you know, it was one of the worst days for me. And when you have that, it's like that surreal moment that the world is kind of just moving around you. All these things are happening. And you, all of a sudden you're in tune to details that seemingly don't matter, like this food in the icebox. You know, these little things, the occasional sniffle hurt, these things that are just going on around you, but those things that stick to you because the moment lost. And, you know, I don't know why everybody wants to cook for people when, you know, after they're like, oh, here's the casserole, here's this, and it's like, you don't want to eat, you don't want to do anything, you know, food is like the last thing in your mind. I thought this was really, really done well. I thought that by expressing, I feel like these are probably actual, I might be wrong, but actual thoughts, because I do remember that feeling of surrealism and being hyper in tune to things around me. And I can feel that in your piece. And then again, you know, down at the end, you know, a presence that of the room that is gone, that has now gone silent. You know, what do you say? There's, you know, what do you say to each other? There's only so many times you could hear, you know, I'm sorry or things like that. All, you know, at some point you become a little bit numb to it. And really sometimes there are no words. Really, really well done. And this was a brilliant and beautiful piece to bring to the night.
Thank you, Sky.
Wait, please.
Wow, this is past realism for me, but very real right now. I love the last stanza, tansy hair, dirty toad memory. The smiles, the embraces, the presence that was still in the was gone silent. Last week I was in a room with my brothers, and we were kind of saying goodbye to my dad. And my brother made the comment that we didn't know what to do because none of us had ever been in a room when my dad wasn't talking. You know, being a Southern Baptist minister, the man never shut up. And he just wasn't talking anymore. So that has gone silent. It's just kind of true. Things just go silent. And that line is just very poignant. And this is a beautiful, beautiful tribute. And I really, really appreciate the write. And I can feel how hard that is. It's beautiful, Steve. It really is.
Thank you, Sweet Pea. I'm sorry to hear about your father.
Thank you.
Okay. May I ask you a question, Stephen?
God, I am a down and a half tonight.
What?
Right about September 11th, my father's in hospice. Good boy.
No, I'm gonna make you really smile with my poem. My poem is very happy, but I want to know what does post memories mean?
What?
What does tangerine hair and dirty toad memories mean?
That's very personal. I can't.
Okay, all right. Just one though. Well, sometimes when Stephen brings in little lines, I like to hear the stories behind them. He does that a lot with his nostalgic write, so I was curious if there was a little bit of a story behind it. She brings that with the pies and huh?
I said there
what?
Is, but I can't. There is
okay.
A story behind it, but I can't.
Oh. Do you guys want to smile? Stephen,
yes.
You read this one already. Oh, I got someone here for a minute, though. Hi, Deb.
No.
Hello, Deb.
Hi, Deb.
Hi. Hi, Stephen. Hey, Tweet.
Hey. We're just hearing some amazing poems. We've gone completely random at this point. We're just putting really random stuff down. If you've read any of them or want to comment anything, you are able to, Deb. I was going to read them a poem that I wrote for you, unless you need to read and run, because I wanted Sweet Pea to hear it, and I thought she would really enjoy it, and she wasn't there when I read it the first time.
Go for it.
Do you need to read and run? Do you want
to? I'll wait till after you read this one.
All right. Thank you again, you guys, both you guys, for bringing all your poems. I've really enjoyed them. This is called The Warble the Wood Owl and TikTok Clock, and I really wanted you to hear this one, Sweet Pea, so I'm glad that you get a first thing to hear it over again. The rooster tips. I can't read through that, Sweet darling. I'm going to have to mute you, sorry. What's the pup, but I can't do it. Okay. The Warble the Wood Owl and the TikTok Clock by Sky Darkholm. The rooster ticks a talk at 8:15, and with a heavy feet and sad trotting tweet, the yellow warble worried she would be late. Her golden feathers were in a blithering row, a mad frazzled flutterwhacking dance with time, for she thought the talk to wake was now. But when she saw the clock was off by 2, the wall of a clock she used to time her brew, she knew with a fuss that it must be askew. Her wrist clock watch was set 10:30, and the fear that the gears were a stutter came to a tick-tock heart shock of an end. Perhaps it was quite right to say it was a start, for instead of primly going on with her day, the yellow bird thought it very fine to stay. She wished to rightly fix the stutter clock, and did not care of silly important businesses like teller work or even hunting for a snark. So with a 2 or 2 or 3 or 16, she started tinkering with mechanical pins and ends of all the in-between. Now it is, in short, a little-known quirk that the wood owl hooted his first retort every night at the hour of 9:03. So indeed, she had tinkered and clinkered without so much of a blink or pause, all for what she called the tick-tock cause. And what of the timely owl, say you? Did the clock at last read 9:03? Were the talks finally in line with the right time? Were the ticks at last brought in tune? Sadly, we'll never know. For the warble took the wood owl and the wrist clock watch and drowned them both in the lagoon. End poem.
Okay. And that is straight.
The answer is always better.
Did you want to comment on that, Sweet Pea?
I do. That is just excellent read, by the way. And I don't know how you even got through all of that, which is all the fact that was off by 2, the wall of flesh she used her time to brew. She knew with the fuss that it must be askew. That's one of my favorite little things in there. And then so with the 2 or 2 or 3 or 16, she started tinkering with mechanical pins, the outs and the ins and all of the in-betweens. And the other one, of course the last one, which drowns everybody in the lagoon, is awesome. But I got to find the other one that I love so much. She wished to rightly fix the stuttered clock and did not care of silly important business, like a tell or work or even hunting for a snark. So cross between Shel Silverstein and kind of Dr. Seuss's, but a little like step up as far as the rhyme and all of that. But I love this. I love the way you read it. I love the way you wrote it. And I love the dark, twisted ending of it, which is why it's not so Dr. Seussy. But I love the fact she just drowned them both for the poor wooden owl and the little warble. Screw them all. They couldn't keep the time. They couldn't keep everything perfectly in line. So off they go. Very well done. Made me giggle all the way through. I'm glad I was muted because otherwise you would have just heard me laugh.
Thank you.
And I brought you butter whacking.
I have to tell you, ever since my goddaughter watched the new Alice in Wonderland, I've had to watch Johnny Depp Futterwhack like 18 million times a day because she goes onto YouTube and watches just a little short clip of him, of the Mad Hatter Futterwhacking.
That sounds kind of dirty, but okay.
Thank you, sweet.
Awesome. Deb, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I thought this one came out fantastic. It wound up on my list, and I was just noticing that it wound up on Hatter's list, too. It's because you have such a remarkable mindset for telling stories, and it shows in your poetry, and it pulls us in and invests us in the story as you read. I thought it was fantastic.
Thank you. I do a lot of stories for you. I don't know why, but your pictures always bring stories.
And I'll say what I wrote on your poem real quick. I'll leave out the front part because Hatter's not here to give a jab at, but I'll say that, you know, I do love the title because it made me think of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And I also really like the ticking and the talking that made it feel like it was a children's story. But then at the end, you threw in that Brothers Grimm twist and brought the darkness of death. I thought this was really cool because it made me smile too.
This is why you guys are my friends. Because I can kill off everybody in the end of a story, and you guys are like, yes, they're all dead. I'm expecting some pretty grim tales on that Halloween Grimm's Brothers special that I'm going to go on. I'm expecting some death and blood and gore. All right, so I was right. Yeah. That wasn't really good. Deb did write to the one I thought she might do, and I'm super excited because we haven't talked about this waiting. All right. Do you want to talk? Do you want me to wait till you're done? Your poems have a lot of information usual. So actually, you know what? I'll wait because usually, did you go like a real fictional or just real fictional?
I sort of put a little teeny spin on it, but yeah, I was fascinated by the information. And to be totally honest, I was already fascinated by the actual ball pyramid itself because it looks like, especially in the dark, you figure it looks like a giant shark fin, you know?
Oh my
God. But I never knew the depth of the stories that went with the place until you sent me all my homework, and I'm totally fascinated. Anyway, let's see what you think. It's called Ball's Pyramid, Crawling Dwellers Defy the Odds. And here we go. A volcano erupted, spewing lava in the sea. Flowing liquid fire glowing hot orange-red, leaving the rock shark fin for Ball's eyes to see. As he dropped the little critters that are now run as the rat homestead, dine on giant tree lobsters. Now the stick bugs are labeled dead. But in the wax-on, wax-off locomotions, insects masquerade as pieces of wood. And after 80 years playing hide-and-seek, two scientists discover that near the bush they stood. They hid from the rats and the fishermen's hooks, but by rock climbers, exoskeletons are found. From the bug corpses as big as a man's hand, dehydrated and laying on the ground. Neath a spindly little bush, the crew spot the creatures dead for over 80 years. Four are shipped for breeding, but two die. Then eggs hatched at the Melbourne Zoo, halting the extinction fears. And to those people, three cheers and palms.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Do you want to say anything more, or do you want me to hit comments? You want to say? I don't want to.
Just a,
if you want to,
just a little. Yeah, if you don't mind. It's just I was completely.
Absolutely not.
I mean,
you, I
okay. Now think about
that,
the fact. The little pieces I put in there, such as the for Ball's eyes to see as he drops his little critters. Now, a long, long, long time ago, that volcano erupted, and all that was left was this little wall that was once part of it, right? Then, and still to this day, nobody knows how these kitten-sized bugs got there. Some have guesstimated that they hitchhiked on birds. Anyway, you figure, okay, they got their own island, and they found a little bush that grew, and they were happy. And then some man, person, human comes in a boat, and rats jump off the boat onto their paradise and start eating them. And then the entire world thinks you're extinct for 80 years until rumors started, and the scientists go to investigate and find. And, like, I'm telling you, I think they are cool. And like, that, especially that one in the middle doing the Karate Kid moves in the picture. I want to hold him. I want to have a chat with him. I think they're really, really cool. I mean, a little bigger than my liking normally for bugs and stuff. But they're, you know what it is? They remind me of praying mantises, and I think those are amazing. And they start out green when they hatch out of the eggs. And then they, you know, go into a variety of shades, a few of which I show here. But it just blows me away. And imagine losing your paradise to it just equate it to people. And think about that for a minute. It's just fascinating. The critters do it. The people do it. You just move in and take over. And the poor indigenous little critters had to go hide under a bush somewhere, and peekaboo, 80 years later, I guess they got tired of playing hide and go seek. So
I'm so excited. That was a wonderful. I'm glad I waited, so that way you can teach us. That way I don't just say my boring spiel. Yours was much better, I have to say. I'm going to give you the job of doing the spiels from now on. This was wonderful. I really love this one. I love the passion that you went with it. I know that many of us I hear it in people's poetry, on people's shows, the consciousness of the earth and the creatures. I love the fact that you brought in here. I love the pictures too. I always like when you do these three little picture things. I think it's pretty cool. And I didn't see a shark fin.
Thank you so
but
much.
Now I do. Oh yeah. Now I do see the shark fin, and I'm really excited because now I even like this thing even more. When I saw this clip on YouTube, I don't know why I just love looking at things and learning about things on YouTube, and they're great conversations. So starters, so you ever in a conversation in a party and you don't know what to talk about, just like, hey, you ever hear about Ball's Island? And then there you go, you've got a conversation. Probably makes you feel like you're crazy, but you know what I mean. But this is great. I love the creativity of the shark fin. First of all, I love how you bring in the names, the dye and the giant tree lobsters, the stick bugs that are labeled dead, and they were. And you know, in the video, it explains that for 80 years these creatures were thought to be extinct. Because, and then you say here, right in the poem, because of many things, and one of them being also the rats. So I like, because the rats would eat them, and they ate them. And, I mean, there were other things that were in, that impacted it, but I really enjoyed that you brought in the pieces of truth with the rats. And then the whole thing with them discovering them on this little teeny tiny tree, it reminds me of, like, the bonsai tree sticking out in the middle of this rock, and there's, like, no life on this island except for this little tree and these little critters that are hiding underneath there. And they were able to repopulate them and introduce them back into their native island in large numbers due to these, like, few that just, you know, did their best to survive for all these years. And I just really love how you brought in the fact, but you made it an interesting story. And it sounded like you were really passionate about it. So that definitely shows not only in your life, but in your voice and in your explanation. And I do appreciate the time and your homework, because I know I like to give everybody homework. But it's really interesting to learn. I went to school for teaching. It wasn't my fault. Here we go. That's why I always
it's your fault. I thought of one last thing. I'm sorry. Another fascinating thing is once they made this discovery, they have been trying to eradicate the rats ever since. And by, I guess, you know, blood testing or whatever, the rats that are there now are the great, great, great grandchildren of the original rats. And nothing they're doing so far is able to help the circumstance. And that's the same thing going on in Australia itself. So that's scary, just saying.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why some people, you know, they, you know, not to go all like, but sometimes things and creatures, like, just in case, so if you watch, I don't know if you've seen it, but they kept some of them in capsulators to do whatever. They're still exist, and some people are like, oh, you know, things shouldn't be in cages or things, but sometimes it's to preserve or protect, and people also have to remember that.
Really, you know how sometimes if a person gets sick and the doctor finds the right combination of stuff, they call it, you know, the doctor come up with a cocktail to keep him, da 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 da. Well, if here's to the scientist who took the time to invent that little cocktail that saved Eve, the female of the ones that are at the zoo, and now was a big aspect of being able to save and breed the way they are now. And I thought it was cute that they called them Adam and Eve. And I'm really better shut up now. Sorry.
No, okay. I'm going to get a comment from Steven.
Yeah, well, first off, I do have to say three cheers to those people that helped them repopulate, because it's always a nice story to actually, hear that they make a comeback. It makes me think of what I looked up the other week when I actually saw a bald eagle fly past the car, and I looked them up to see if they were still endangered, and they aren't. They are no longer endangered either. So that's always a good thing when animals can make a comeback from what either natural or from what man has done to them. And we hope that, they can continue on for others too. But I really like the piece, Deb. I like the way that you wrote this. I told you in my comment that it's always fun to learn stuff in an entertaining way through a piece like this, because you could tell that you had fun writing it, and the imagery in here and the facts that you bring in just bring it all home. It's a great write.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Appreciate it.
I might have to. I have a thing with lists. I think I like to enjoy making too many lists. I may need to write a list that says people that did their homework and file all these like homework under that list.
Do we get gold stars?
Absolutely. This is definitely a gold star sticker, 100% A. You've passed the class. I'm so excited. Wonderful presentation. Sweetie, what do you think? She was really wanting to hear the last prompt. I'm like, I'm going to say the last prompt. If no one writes to it, I'm bringing a leftover Sunday show for any ones that were missed. And we're going to have a leftover Sunday random stuff show. And I was like, and I have a feeling Deb might write about this one, so we'll wait. So she's been impatiently waiting to hear about this topic the whole show. Sweet, what do you think?
I love the information. I love the fact that these little things have survived and that they're as big as a hand, because they do kind of remind you of the praying mantises. And I love the praying mantis. So... And I love the different colors. I love the black one. He's so shiny. He looks like a sports car. Like he's the sports car model of them all.
Yeah,
like,
the sleek model.
Slick and pretty. So I kind of like him.
And then the other one is like the crabby one, like he's, you know, all prickly and ready to beat someone up, like a, I don't know, kind of like the old Volkswagen or something. So I would give them all character names and kind of, and like I said, I like the Adam and Eve prospect of that too. I thought that was kind of cool. But with the different colors and everything, I think they'd be like the next hermit crab craze if they ever came to America. They'd all be like painted up and in their houses and be given names and all that because they're kind of cute. And I just see that. I have this whole story.
I want one.
I'm already in my head. Exactly. You know, because they get the one that you have where she said she got the little eyes and they just have personality in their faces. So that's really cool. I really like what you brought to us. I like how you wrote the poem and all the information and all that. So well done, Kimberly. Well done.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all you. Oh, and one little note, at the very bottom, if you click on that link later, there's tons more of where I got the information from, but the coolest part is towards the middle, there's a video that the zoo recorded of the egg, one of the eggs hatching, and what they go through to get out of this little, what looks like an acorn, and it comes out green and looking like a praying mantis, and then the colors come later, but it's pretty cool. Just click on it and check it out. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Deb. You got a love for these. I was just talking about you and Stephen the other day, and by the way, if you look at a picture on the board, it's he who walks behind the milkweed again. We did Children in the Corn, and we got in the subject of praying mantises yesterday. But you know, I was talking about you and Stephen, and talking about your piranhas to other people, just so you know.
Oh, cool.
I was like, did you know that I have two friends? I call you guys my friends. No, because you are. I'm like, that had praying mantis, I mean, that had piranhas as pets. Did you know that was a thing? And the person said, yeah, I heard of that before. And I'm like, why am I the only one who hasn't heard of this before? All right, before I get you to plug your show, I want to welcome on Rack, I think, and see if he heard your poem. Hi, Rack, I think.
Hey. I didn't bring crabs, no.
Rack and Tor.
Okay. Did you happen to hear Deb poem? I don't think you were here.
I just heard you guys discussing it. You didn't leave me out in the lobby too long.
I don't.
Just long enough to make a crabby comment.
I never bring in people when the comments are running. I always wait because I don't. Cause sometimes people like to say hi. You know, some people like to say hi. How are you doing?
Yeah.
How are you doing, Rack? How's Pennsylvania?
Oh, it's cool. It's cool. It's quiet. It's Pennsylvania.
Okay. All right, Deb. What do you got going on? Is it my Hatter show yet? Is it the Mad Hatter tree? Is that the next one?
Tomorrow is Lady A's show at 9 p.m. and she's got some really awesome photos up of some awesome cars and some badass motorcycles and like real stunners and there should be something that tickles your fancy that you could write about for her. And I will, I'll leave Thursday this week. I think, I don't know what Friday for sure. So Saturday is Topic Treasure, and that's at 11 p.m. Eastern. And yes, Monday is those images of the tree-ish art. And Jesus, choose art and run with it, and I'm looking forward to that. And Stephen, congratulations on 10 number 200. The poem's great. My sweet, I sent you a message with a link, and I do have to go, but I had a really fun time. Awesome prompt, and love and respect to you all.
Night, Deb.
Thank you, Deb.
Love and respect.
I've been waiting for this Monday night because it's going to be a shock for all of you, but I really love trees. I know. It's a super shock.
Shocking.
You would never guess.
Do you know who can fix trees?
What?
I never had a threesome.
Oh my gosh.
Do you know who protects trees?
Do you know who what?
Protects trees.
Druids.
Are you going to say the praying mantises?
Yes, you're right, because they eat the bugs that mess with the trees.
What bug? Do you know more about this, or is that the end of your statement? Or are you going to you're going to teach me something?
That's the end of my statement, but if you ever watch any documentaries about the praying mantis, you will see them on tree branches snagging bugs and aphids and that kind of crap and eating them up.
Okay, it's not the praying mantis I have a problem with. It's the horrific things they do to monarch butterflies.
Million autopsies.
I guess I'll have to like them again. They are really cool looking, and they are pretty cool creatures. It's just they're graphic with the monarch butterflies, a little bit too graphic for me. I like the monarch butterflies. But I guess we all gotta eat, right? Maybe I should
we
just
do.
Get over it. So, you know.
Now the monarch and the vicefly are very similar looking. Do you know which one is poisonous? One of them is poisonous.
The monarch and the what?
The viceroy.
Okay, what? How can you tell the difference?
I don't know. The one is camouflaged to look like the other to protect it.
Do you want to see a monarch butterfly ready to hatch, like right ready? Like you could even see the colors through the chrysalis? Look on the board.
Oh, no.
I was so excited.
Yeah, I was really excited. This is actually the place where the praying mantis was, too. It was in the same location. So, you know, they know some good hunting grounds. There
was
one more. No, it was not. Well, they were on the same house, but this was on the side door, and the praying mantis was on the front door, and they were on separate days. So, you know, but that was after.
That was after
she left. So you got a little. You got a before and after. Huh?
He could have done like one of those. What's that character from Family Guy? Like they're going, hey, y'all, I see you're going to hatch from that chrysalis, but oh, no, I'm going to eat you.
All right. Steven, I love when I give you a to-do poem. Because remember that to-do flower poem that we won't talk about it too much? This is your to-do poem. Your to-do poem is to take... to take those three pictures and then write little blurbs in between in his voice and then do that poem in the Family Guy's voice and just go through them on one poem, but just put the pictures up so that the things that they oh no just write them up. There's your to-do list your poem challenge. Pretty good. You did that one, and then you did another one. I can't talk about either because I can't talk about any of your poems, I guess. But I took the picture in New York. It was at the New York the cafe or something. No, it was a food place. so I'm sure you guys can guess what Stephen wrote about.
Hard Rock
Cafe.
Hard Rock.
So there was
Rock Cafe.
Hard Rock Cafe, that was it, yeah. So he wrote about that for a challenge, the flower, and then I'm sure there were other challenges, but you're quite good at them. Anyway, I'm just rambling now. Thank you, guys. Rack, do you have a poem that has to do with any way, shape, or form on any of the topics, colors, bugs, at this point, you can go wide, or eyes, or, you know, the earth, or
no
something
phone?
Really random, I think you called, and I'm going to have you read something, regardless, or...
I've got tons of flirty eye poems. Behind Her Eyes, I think, is a good one. I don't remember if that was central or not, but I don't think it was, actually.
Okay.
Behind Her Eyes lay the optic mirror.
Right. So while I'm looking for that, someone's got to talk about something. You can do Rack,
well,
you
actually,
to talk about the show.
The interesting thing about what you said about the optic nerve is my eye problems can't be fixed because nerve damage is permanent. So, you know, you could take out someone's eye and replace it, but there's nothing to connect it to if the optic nerve is shot. So once your optic nerve gets damaged, that's it. Your eyesight, the best you could hope for it to remain stable.
Yeah.
So any time someone gets eye damage, if it's to the optic nerve, it's permanent.
Yeah, I had a buddy of mine in high school that had something happen where something actually crawled. I'm going to gross this guy out. Crawled behind his eye from the dirt he was playing in, I guess you could say, and damaged his optic nerves. And he lost his sight in his one eye because of that.
Wow.
It wasn't a praying mantis guy.
I'm not afraid of just the butt, but you know what,
no,
though? I think I'm going to have to get over it. I think I'm going to get – you've inspired me to get over it. They have to eat, too. And they're saving the trees, so I guess I can like them.
They used to be illegal to kill, too, but I think they were –
Little
I have a very weird eye story.
Oh. Hey, sweet.
Yes.
Hey.
Hey, darling. My story is I have losing the pigment in my eye, and it swirls behind the back, like all the way around my eye, but not that I can see it, but all the pigment color of my eye swirls behind the back of my eye.
Oh, wow.
So
that's
my dark brown, so the dark, I used to have really dark, dark brown eyes, and now they're turning green.
They're jealous of something, huh?
I'm telling you, it's just really, really weird.
Well, I know lighter color eyes are recessive traits because of genetics. The lighter colors are recessive because they're more delicate, the blues and the greens.
Yeah, all blue-eyed people
losing
are related.
Color.
Did you know that?
I'm just losing color.
All blue-eyed people are related to each other. I've seen this thing about eye thing and stuff like that. I have, like, really, my eyes are green, and then they're gray, and then they look bluish, but they're really green, but they do look bluish, but gray. But they're mostly gray, and whenever light hits, I have to wear sunglasses in the winter. Everybody's like, what are you doing? I'm so snowy.
The glare, yeah.
All right, thank you guys for talking. You guys did a great job, and I got your that time, and I found it. I didn't pre-read it, so hopefully it's appropriate, Rack. And here we go. All right. Oh. Her eyes. I have to get back into the studio part.
go.
Behind Her Eyes by Raconteur. To look at you is to see the stars snatched from the heavens to be placed in far more seraphic settings. Some might mistake them for your eyes, but I see the spark that you cling to amidst the darkness of myriad hardships that you've endured. I would gladly live a lifetime as a tear, nurturing your joy, refusing to traverse your cheek, that I might live on, basking in your glow. I lose myself in your celestial orbs, pierced to my core, overwhelmed by desire, growing more irresistible every moment we're apart. Just a look so touches me, I am overwhelmed by the intoxicating effects of your grace. As efficient as the winter strips the trees, you bring me to my knees, leaving me hopeful to be there, adoring witness to the changing countenance of your face. As you grow even more beautiful, every passing moment we share our tears and laughter. Last night I watched the sunset and wished it brought you comfort that you might find rest. And the times slumber eludes you, the skies weep, wanting only to wash away your anguish. With everything I discover, I realize there's so much more I want to learn, offering everything I am, asking only for your heart in return. End poem.
Brilliant piece. This was beautiful, Rack. I do remember reading it before. Oh, which parts do I want to pick? You first of all, you put metaphor of as a system, as the winter strips the trees. I really, really love that. And the, you know, look, I like the way you worded this. Just a look so touches me. I love how you worded that sentence. Wonderful romanticism. And then at the end, you know, the changing countenance of your face as you grow even more beautiful. And then talking about the sunset and thinking, you know, of the other person, and then even saying that, you know, the tear, you know, the earth weeps or the sky weeps to wash away, you know, the other person's pain or their anguish, as you say. It's such a beautiful lament, and the way that you bring in not only the effect that this person has on you, but also how they're going into the world and how the world's affecting them, I think is beautiful, because sometimes when we speak about a loved one or someone that we love, we often center ourselves with the gravity, and we can't help it because that person, you know, they're doing this, they're doing that. But to be able to reach out and say how the world is affecting them as well and how one might share it with them, almost like an onlooker, I would say. I like that effect that you put to it. I think it brings out the sense of admiration and kind of brings that feeling to forefront as well as love. I thought this was a brilliant and wonderful pick for tonight.
Thanks.
And I'm going to get a comment from Sweet Pea.
Well, I do believe that every woman must just fall on their knees for your poetic, romantic, sassy soul. I will just give you my heart, my eyes, whatever you want after hearing you read that. Beautiful, lovely. I just don't know how you do it. You are just one of the most romantic writers here on All Poetry, and this is just another example of what you can do, Raconteur. Beautiful.
Thank you, sweet.
Okay. So what do you guys think about, we got 20 minutes left. You want to do a final round?
I'm game.
I'm game.
My sweet. Okay. So, Rack, now that you've picked one on topic, you can pick anything off topic because you got one on topic. Now you can go anywhere you want, completely random, really random stuff with Miss Darko. And sweet, you could pick something really random. And I think if we have time, I'll pick something else really random too. Do you have one ready, sweet, or was that too quick to ask you? Now, I've been really putting her to work. I've been very demanding this show. I usually have the next show ready to look at or to talk about after the end of each show. But I usually only do one show a month, and I did three shows this month. And so a lot of my topics that I had prepared that were pretty far in advance have depleted. So I don't have the topic for next month up yet, but it will be up soon. Do you have a poem now, sweet? And then Rack, if you could just tell me what you want in the studio and I'll put it in there.
I think if you didn't hear Remembering the Heat, that's a good one.
Oh, sweet left me. That's what happened.
Yes,
sweet,
I did. But I came back.
Calling on. I have you twice. You're in the studio twice on the same number.
I know, but I lost you. I got hung up on.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so
yes.
Do you want Remembering that's in the studio? Is that what you said, Rack?
Yeah, it's probably in the studio already because I see Sweet commented on it and it's not old, so I don't think you heard it, though.
Okay. And Sweet, do you have one? Or
yeah,
still
hold on 1 second.
I don't want to rush
have
you.
One up for a minute. Don't rush me, baby.
It'll happen when it happens.
You know,
I know.
I'll be there for you.
Remembering. I'm just going to put it up. I don't like to look through that whole thing. All right, so.
Well, I've got one for you.
Okay.
I do have one for you. It's about a tree.
Good.
I
like
one about. I know you do. Oh, well, Rax is up. Why don't you read his? Oh, that was the last one you did. Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. This is a tree in time. Ocean spray tickled my neophyte leaves as the earth shook and the stars hailed a king. I, strong of trunk and thick in branches, wailed upon his death 2,000 years ago. Tree protector, listener friend to the forest flowers, gold miners, western cowboys, and beachcomber rats, giggle that California trendsetter hacks. Historians, archaeologists, scientists, arboriculturalists peering at me, all Dr. Seuss hackery to this old man, redwood tree. Edging upwards, a TikTok linear view, beginning, middle, the final watch ticking in view. Wind restrained, animal rested, birds nested, war crown in nature's glory before the rise of smoke-choked air. Mother Nature sent firemen to save my branches, to calm the flames licking deep into my roots. Stop the clocks, I shall not burn, the rise of black ash confuses birds, the bear, the elk, fire flashes, exploding bombs. Cover ground, look up at me, and find another way around. I fell to my death in a burning rage.
Are you bringing me a sad tree poem? Oh, my goodness. I read this one.
Just kidding. I really was a weeping willow. I know. You know, I do remember this. First of all, I want to say such a beautiful nod and clever, a tree time instead of tea time, I thought was brilliant wordplay. I really enjoyed this whole idea, but also the title and that play on it. And, of course, the language, the wailed upon his death 2,000 years ago, bringing in that storytelling. And, you know, I strong of trunk and thick of branches, these beautiful trees that have been here on the earth long before we have, and just keep getting cut down. You know, the forest, flowers, gold miners, western cowboys, and beachcomber rats giggled, which I know that you put giggled in your poems. You do love that word, and I always see it. And when I see it, I think you know, it's such an out of place word that you wouldn't necessarily put in some of your poems that you put in, and yet it works so well. I do like when you throw it in there, and then of course you actually, you know, you bring in the redwood, which I absolutely loved. Beautiful trees, and then, you know, going down to nature's sent firemen to save my branches, to calm the flames licking deep into my roots. And I have a friend over in California, and she sent me pictures of these forest fires, and it's just horrific. It's just insane and devastating, and she actually had to move. And, you know, there's so much devastation, and people just and people by me too, because I often skirt the news. I don't watch as much news as I really should. And people are a little in the dark of what's going on. And again, me too. Sometimes I'm in the dark, and I oughtn't be. Because people, you know, if it doesn't affect us, if that's not around us, sometimes we don't realize what's happening in the world. And we all got to try to be better at that. And this piece not only speaks of trees, but it also speaks of, you know, those plunging, raging forest fires that are happening all over. So really, really well done, Sweet.
Thank you.
And Raconteur.
Yeah, I almost was going to say you don't really have to call. I mean, I'm the only other one. I love the references you make to nature, because, you know, you speak of it in ways that can be taken, you know, more than one way. And, you know, that's my favorite use of language, is the double entendres and things like that. They say that the trees are the lungs of the earth, and, you know, you talk of them in such a way of, it's beautiful but sad at the same time, because of what's, you know, what happens to the forests and things like that. You just got a beautiful way of writing that I really like and enjoy. I could pull out most of your stuff and be like, you know, it's sometimes when you trick me. But more often than not, I think I can follow where you're going, though. That's the other thing I love about the way you write, because you kind of lull the reader into a sense of euphoria almost, and they don't realize when you take that left turn and you're talking about death or murder or something. It's like, you know, no, that's not a good thing. I want to scream sometimes, and they're just sitting there going, yeah, it was lovely. I'm like, blood and gore. you got a wonderful way of being able to do that too. You know, you can take, I guess it's the HR in you. You can take an ugly situation and dress it up like a pony and sell it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Excellent. And we're at 10 minutes, so we're actually going to close out with Rack's poem. Now, there isn't a poem remembering, but there is a poem remembering the heat. Is that the one that you wanted?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. So it's in there. Thank you, sweet, bringing me tree poems. Treedom. I love trees. All right. Brass.
I only gave you two poems. What do you mean?
Huh?
She only gave you two poems. You said she gave you three.
She gave me like six. Sweepy's been with me from the beginning. It was just me, Steven, and Sweepy, and we just started dropping random stuff. She's giving me a lot of poems tonight. I'm really excited. All right, here we go.
Remembering the Heat by Raconteur. I can't sleep. It's this heat. For some reason, it's got me dreaming of you. Jumping in the car to cool off together. Heading to the shore, seeking refuge from the weather. It promises to be a long, hot summer. But it's you that makes me sweat. My chest pounding like a drummer. Beating back any deeds I might regret. Watching you put your feet up on the dashboard as the radio blares our song makes me melt when you sing along. Gonna sit together in the sand watching the sun go down as the stars come out in your eyes, tasting the salt on your skin, raising our temperature till we burn the skies. It promises to be a long, hot summer, but it's you that makes me sweat. The mercury may hit record highs, but it's the sear of your kiss I'll never forget. End poem.
Bringing in the summer heat. I love this one. The promise is to be a long, hot summer. It's you that makes me sweat, my chest pounds like a drummer, beating back any beats I might regret. I think this is very lyrical. I think that it would be very easy to shift gears here and write this into a bit of a song. I do love the lyricism in it. And, of course, the setting of the radio blaring and taking that summer drive. And there's something about, you know, I haven't written too many top downs, but there's something, I don't know, it just reminds me of driving with top down. And you know, when it's really hot, when outside, take a nice drive, something that you just got to do, especially with, if you have nothing to do and you're spending time with that person you love, I think it just brings me a smile, the whole piece. It's beautifully written, wonderful. Wonderful in sentiment, and I like the comparison with, you know, the mercury records may hit, and then with the heat of the person instead of just the you know, a nature of temperature. I like that duality in the piece and how you played on that. Brilliantly done, Rack, as always.
Thank you, Sky.
And we.
Ah, brilliantly done, as you say, and I love all the play on words and what can happen throughout the summer. And I love your metaphors too. I think they're brilliant in here. As you say, you like the double entendres, and I think there's quite a few in here. so double up on your you know, summer heat. I think I might need a cold shower. Very well done.
I'll bring the loofah.
Hey, this is not Sunday, guys. Save Dad. Okay, so I do want to thank you. I want to thank Steven, Wheat, Jeff, Raconteur for all calling, for all participating, for giving me brilliant poems that were really random, always appreciated, and I hope you liked the prompt. I really enjoy the little videos. I hope you guys do as well, learning a little bit. And I had a lot of fun, and I do have to talk about our closing music. We opened with Foo Fighters, Everlong, and we're closing with Foo Fighters, Best of You. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Foo Fighters. Did you want to say something?
No, I was. I love the two songs. So.
Oh, good. Okay, good. The Foo Fighters are an American rock band formed in Seattle, Washington, in 1994. Former Nirvana drummer Dave Grohl and a one-man project following the dissolution of Nirvana after the suicide of Kurt Cobain. The group took its name from Foo Fighter, a nickname coined and by Allied aircraft pilots for UFOs and other aerial phenomena. Over the course of their career, Foo Fighters have won 12 Grammy Awards, including Best Rock Album, 4 times. Prior to the release of Foo Fighters' 1995 album, Foo Fighters, which featured Grohl as the only official member, Grohl recruited bassist Nate Mandel and drummer William Goldsmith, both formerly a Sunny Day Real Estate, as well as Nirvana touring guitarist Pat Smear. The band began with performances in Portland, Oregon, and Goldsmith quit during the recording of their second album, The Color and the Shape, and that was released in 1997. So I hope you enjoy the music. I hope you enjoy the show. I definitely enjoyed you guys, and I'm see you soon.
Bye. Thank you, guys. Night, sweet.
Night, Rack.
Good night, world. All right, I'm going to press the button.
I've got another confession to make.